The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for the day, Jonathan Larson.
And I'm your other host, Jody Green.
And we are very excited to be joined by...
Dr. Travis Beret.
And you are of Creighton University, correct?
I am.
We are all here in Nebraska. This is the first time I think that we've done a Nebraska. Well, maybe in the past there's been a couple, but everybody is in the same room on an episode of Arthropod. Doesn't usually happen. Nice. We have one person that Skypes in. So it's very awesome to have you on the show. You are going to be talking to us about ticks, right?
That's right. And primarily ticks that can transmit Lyme disease.
So can you introduce yourself and what you do? Why this, we're in this office?
Sure. I was born in a small log cabin. So my name is Travis Beret. I am a native Nebraskan. I graduated from a very small school. My graduating class was 20, Cedar Rapids, Nebraska. I got my bachelor's degree at University of Nebraska at Lincoln in biological sciences. And that's, I'll just mention that's where my fascination with critters began. I spent a transformative summer out at Cedar Point Biological Station, took 16 credits of upper level biology and fell in love, especially with invertebrates. And that has led me over the years to ticks. My PhD was done at University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora, Colorado. And that was actually working on an enteric pathogen, Salmonella. And primarily what I was looking at was host-pathogen interactions. So I was studying how Salmonella is able to survive in white blood cells and ultimately cause severe disease. When I did a postdoctoral fellowship, I was looking for a new niche, something that I hadn't really thought about or explored, and came across a wily scientist up at Rocky Mountain Laboratories, which is in western Montana. That is an NIH laboratory that made its name really for tick-borne diseases. It is where Rocky Mountain spotted fever was first characterized and where the first vaccines for Rocky Mountain spotted fever was first developed. And it is also where Willy Burgdorfer identified the bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi that causes Lyme disease. And so it's sort of the mecca for Lyme disease research. And what fascinated me about the bug and why I went up there initially wasn't about the ticks. The ticks was a benefit, I guess. Mm-hmm. My fascination was this is a bug that's extremely fastidious, which means that it has to acquire almost everything it needs to grow from its host. So unlike things like Salmonella that can synthesize its own amino acids, make its own nucleotides, etc., really it can't do any of that for itself. So it's highly adapted to its hosts and tick vectors. All right, so that's one other thing. The other cool thing is it's one of the few organisms that does not use iron. It's an iron-free bug. And my area of research with host-pathogen interactions focuses a lot on oxidative stress and its effect on pathogens. And a lot of that for most bugs centers on having iron and iron-containing enzymes. Borrelia is unique, doesn't use iron. So that was my initial fascination. So I was there for about 4 years working on Borrelia burgdorferi. And then the pull of Nebraska brought me back. I was an assistant professor at the University of Nebraska at Kearney for about 2.5 years. And while I was there, I was teaching microbiology to nursing students primarily. And then I taught some public health courses, which actually fit in really well with thinking about tick-borne diseases and other vector-borne diseases. I was fortunate enough to get recruited to Creighton a few years ago. I've been here for 3 years. And now I'm able to focus most of my time on doing research on Lyme and then teaching the next generations of health professionals.
Cool. From Lopers to Blue Jays, right?
That's right, yeah.
And I'm enjoying this conversation so far because he says bug in a different way that we say bug. He's talking about diseases and we talk about the actual critter that's carrying the pathogen. Okay. Yeah. So you were interested in the disease first, and the ticks just kind of came along with it, really.
Yeah, yeah. So
let's talk a little bit about ticks then. So we're talking about something that feeds on people for part of their life cycle, right, Jody?
Mm-hmm.
And what other kinds of things do they feed on?
Well, the host that, or the ticks that we have here are three host ticks, correct? Mm-hmm. So small, like as in mice and up to people,
yeah,
livestock, deer.
Yeah, especially deer. I mean, you know, when it comes to a lot of these hard-bodied ticks, especially the ones that bite humans, what's pretty much ubiquitous around here are white-footed mice, so mm-hmm. the paramyscus mice, and especially white-tailed deer. These ticks just love white-tailed deer.
So can we say that anywhere that these two wildlife creatures are found, you can find ticks?
Certainly the ones that bite humans, yeah. Yeah, so you have a lot of other species of ticks that don't specialize on mice. You have those that feed on birds, and you have those that'll target cattle, for example. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be restricted to that. But as far as the ones that bite humans in our area, it's primarily you're looking at those at small mammals and deer, especially for the adults.
And ticks are arachnids, so part of their life cycle they have 8 legs. When they're nymphs, is that right, that they have 6 legs?
Larva.
When they're a larva, they have 6 legs, and then they develop that extra pair and become nymphs and then adults.
That's right.
And so they feed on lots of different animals while they're doing this. And because they're feeding on blood, does this lead them to become effective hosts for diseases?
So this is a really interesting thing, is not all ticks are permissive for all types of pathogens. And this is a really important one when it comes to Lyme disease, and we can get into that here in a little bit. But we do know that there is a host specificity for different pathogens. So, for example, you can't take the bacteria that causes Lyme disease and infect a rodent. We can do that by needle inoculation. But if, say, you put a dog tick to feed on that infected mouse, that tick can acquire the Borrelia from the infected mouse, but those spirochetes can't survive inside of that tick. So it appears that a lot of bacterial strains, whether we're talking about Borrelia or you're talking about Rickettsia or Ehrlichia, they're specialized to hosts typically.
And what are the special things that they need? Like, why can't they survive in all ticks?
Oh, so I'd say that's a bit of an open-ended question. And it's actually something our laboratory is very interested in, and that is, ticks, like people, have an immune system. And we know that immune responses can be quite different from human to human. Well, from species to species of tick, there are differences in their immune system. And we're only now really scratching the surface as to what those might be. So there's a variety of hypotheses about why a particular microbe may not be able to survive in a tick species. Some things that, a tick, I should mention, doesn't have a acquired immune response like we do. They can't make antibodies to a pathogen. But what they can do is to produce antimicrobial peptides, which humans do as well. These antimicrobial peptides don't affect all bacteria the same way. So it may be that the certain classes of antimicrobial peptides that one tick makes, Borrelia can't survive in. It could be that Borrelia is uniquely adapted to resist the antimicrobial peptides that are produced by Ixoides ticks, for example. And that's just one area, but there are possibly other things going on.
Yeah. So I think that's cool.
So similar to how all the different species of mosquitoes, like how we have a malaria mosquito.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the different genera. Do you know, I don't know if this is more what you study, but the symptoms of Lyme disease?
Okay, so this actually will segue into a really interesting thing that I was going over. So we'll just focus in the United States. In the United States, Lyme disease is typically transmitted by Ixoides ticks. So we have Eastern black-legged tick, Ixoides scapularis, and the Western black-legged tick, Ixoides pacificus. And for quite a while in the United States, we've primarily been focusing on what we call Borrelia burgdorferi sensu strictu as being the primary Borrelia species transmitted by Ixoides ticks. What's emerged over the last several years in the United States is that Ixoides ticks can actually transmit other types of Borrelia. And one of these was just recently described since I've been here at Kearney's. Folks up at Mayo Clinic published a study showing that a new species, Borrelia mayonii, can be transmitted by the same Ixoides ticks in the upper Midwest. And why I brought that up in response to the question is the symptomology is a little bit different if you acquire a Borrelia mayonii. So like a lot of tick-borne diseases, this was what makes this so difficult knowing what people are getting. So a lot of people think they have Lyme, but there's so many common symptoms with tick-borne diseases. So you can imagine you have fever. You may have a rash. You may have neck pain. You may some diseases will cause sort of a Bell's palsy phenotype. Well, mayonii does have some distinct symptoms in that it can cause nausea, vomiting. It can have a macular rash and some other neurological symptoms that you typically don't see with Borrelia burgdorferi sensu stricto. Okay. The other thing that's interesting with mayonii is that's one that you actually can find in the blood. So burgdorferi, if you just draw blood from somebody who's infected and do a blood smear and look under a scope, you don't see the spirochetes there. With mayonii, you can actually see the spirochetes there. So it's a unique feature of that pathogen. It is closely related to Borrelia burgdorferi sensu stricto. Okay, so that if that wasn't already confusing enough, we also know that Ixoides ticks can transmit another Borrelia species. This particular Borrelia species, I always botch the pronunciation on this, but Miyamotii or Miyamotoi, it is a relapsing fever spirochete. Okay, the sort of dogma in the field when I joined was that hard body ticks do not transmit relapsing fever spirochetes. We do know now that that's not the case, that there are species of relapsing fever spirochetes that can be transmitted by Ixoides. So this one also can cause fever, chills, headaches. But what you get with relapsing fever spirochetes is a really high bacteremia. And so you can find, you can take that blood and look at a smear and you'll see these relapsing fever spirochetes. And so the relapsing fever is just exactly what the symptoms say. You get the spike in spirochetemia, a corresponding spike in fever or body temperature. And then your body creates an antibody response, wipes out almost all the spirochetes. A subpopulation is able to persist and explode in growth again. Your body makes a new antibody specialized to that particular subpopulation, and so on and so forth. Okay, so a lot of different symptoms that can be caused by really closely related bugs. So it's really important when it comes to diagnostics, because we now know that there's three different Borrelia that can be transmitted by a single tick. So when it comes to testing and diagnostics, this has really muddied the waters.
So if someone had those symptoms, what would your advice be? Like, go to a doctor, but then just say to the doctor, what should they do? Because a lot of times, especially in Nebraska, there's not a lot of people in the medical profession that know a lot about ticks and tick-borne diseases.
Yeah, so I think this is the major challenge that we're facing in the country. And so, again, just since the short time that I've actually been in the field, you know, the last 10 years or so, we've had this where if you look at the CDC statistics, roughly 30,000 people a year are positive for Lyme. Well, and just a few years ago, CDC comes out and says, actually, we need to revise those numbers. It's probably closer to 300,000.
Wow.
And what that really tells you overall is that that borrelioses are probably massively underdiagnosed. So what do you say to a person? First is, have you been bitten by a tick? And not everybody will know they've been bitten by a tick. What we ended up having to do with a friend of ours in the running community around here in Omaha, I won't mention her name on the podcast, but an individual who ran ultra marathons, very active individual, and all of a sudden got really sick. And Jody, maybe you can shed some more light on that.
Actually, this is how we met.
Yeah, it's how we first met.
I had run into her, or actually we were running together in April. And she had said, she was telling me how weak she was, how sick she was feeling. And I asked her if she was bit by a tick. And she said yes. And I asked her if it was outside of Nebraska, because we are not known to have like a reoccurring population, established population in terms of the definition. And she said she was in Illinois and she remembers her son picking the tick out of her head. And I had asked if it had been attached for more than 24 hours. She said, yes, probably. And then I said, hey, I know a tick guy. And so that's how we came together.
Yeah.
But yeah, she went through a lot of hard times just trying to find someone to help her, to help diagnose her. And so I don't know about the tests specifically. I know that you had helped her through that to find a doctor.
Yeah. So what happened here is, so when I came to Creighton, and so I have to go through all the, to do research on any bug, there are biosafety committees here. And for animal work, we have institutional animal use and care, or IACUC, that we have to push all of our protocols through. And as soon as you mentioned that you want to do tick-borne stuff, everybody in the room starts itching, you know, and so through this anyway, you get the questions from people on the committees because you have people from the community that are part of these because we want the community to be aware of what's going on. And they say, well, we don't, one of our clinical microbiologists at Creighton said, well, we don't have Lyme disease here. And I said, well, yeah, probably you do have some cases of it, especially with people who go out of state. I mean, you can go just across the river over into Iowa and you'll find Ixoides ticks. Okay. So with our subject here that brought us together, when I met her in April at the Tales and Trails Half Marathon, she was describing what's gone on and that she couldn't get anybody to listen to her. And I said, well, let me talk to the clinical microbiologist, here at Creighton and see who he recommends for an infectious disease specialist here. And so this is, shows you how difficult it can be for people. I had to go to, I had to use my connections here at the university to say, hey, this gal has classic symptoms of Lyme. She needs to go to somebody that will actually test her for it. And at least from what I've been told, she tested positive and has gotten some treatment. But it's really frustrating because she's at a point now, if you don't catch this early, it can develop into long-term symptoms.
Yeah, she says some days she has good days and she could run forever, and other days she's just in bed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's the tough part of those of us who like to play outside.
So you've mentioned a couple times now that we don't necessarily have Lyme here or the deer tick here. And so Nebraska's kind of a unique case in the tick world is what I've gathered since living here is that we have ticks, we have tick diseases, but we don't have the big tick or the big tick disease. So does it make it harder for your research here or is it something that, because when we talk to people about ticks, there's some people who are very nonchalant about the whole thing because they're like, oh, well, I read we don't have Lyme, so I don't really care about ticks in Nebraska, but really that's not a good attitude to have. Would you agree?
I totally agree. It's a really bad attitude to have. So we are actually working on, real complex title. We're calling it the Nebraska Tick Project. And we started this while I was at Kearney. We just started having students go out and we'd go out with them and we'd collect ticks, grind them up, extract DNA and see what pathogens we could detect. And we did that mostly locally, but now we have students through our online master's program who are all over the state collecting ticks and sending them in. And then now that I'm at Creighton, we've been collecting ticks around the area here and grinding them up and seeing what they have. And what you find is that even in Nebraska, our ticks are carrying important pathogens. And especially in something that came out just in the last few years, we've known it probably around here in the Omaha area that we have Lone Star ticks. But when I was at Kearney, and you look at the maps, we weren't supposed to have Lone Star ticks. And the first spring I went out to collect ticks, it was raining amblyomma ticks we were out for a rodent survey for another project. But we started grinding them up and see what they have. And we've got rickettsia. We have ticks that carry Francisella tularensis, a causative agent of tularemia. That can be deadly. We have sporadic cases of tularemia in Nebraska almost every year. And then you have these sporadic cases of potential Lyme disease in the state, which is something that...
message, since we're always dealing with the public, is that it doesn't matter what kind of tick. Like, you need to prevent and get them out if you, you know, get a tick bite. Did you see the posts and things about how there was a vaccination for Lyme disease?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? And do veterinarians vaccinate dogs?
Yeah.
Or Lyme But is it geographical? Like, we don't.
Oh, right. Well, so if you took your dog to the vet here where we supposedly mm-hmm. don't have Lyme, could they get? I don't know the answer to that question, actually.
No. Well, I know my veterinarian doesn't. I called Nest.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I didn't
no,
know.
I've,
that
yeah,
was my
I've,
N of one. So.
Yeah. No, I've not. I do know that that there is a good vaccine in dogs.
East Coast,
yeah.
They probably do.
Yeah. And, you know, my Basset Hound at home, Wally, he's not vaccinated for it. Probably should be as much time as he spends out on our family farm. But, and actually that part of the state, if you're going to find Ixoides, you'll probably find them in the southeast corner of the state.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Missouri.
Yeah.
Iowa,
bordering
so,
states.
Yeah, kind of
Missouri,
right
Kansas.
Well, I think it's important to know that ticks don't know state lines.
Nope.
Right?
And neither
so
do
like,
birds
oh, well,
that carry the larva mm-hmm. and,
so,
and all that.
I mean, they could be easily dropped, mm-hmm. right? But that isn't an established population.
Right.
So an established population is like various life stages.
Yeah.
Right?
So I'm not.
Six ticks. I think it was like six ticks at various life stages at different times of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's established versus reported.
Yeah.
So you can report a tick that's a black-legged tick or Ixoides tick, but that doesn't necessarily mean there's an established reoccurring population. And I think that it's hard when it comes to funding because if we don't have that
Tell
tick, no
it.
One wants to give any money, you know, to go survey.
Yeah.
But then our maps may not be accurate. So it's really about pinpointing. And I know that's one of the things we talk about is like every time we find a lead, you know, to find out, because then maybe we could get funding to do something in Nebraska.
Yeah. I think it's the funding climate overall for science is really difficult. Funding for active surveillance for ticks is almost non-existent. I mean, what spurred our project in Nebraska was funding through the Rural Futures Institute through UNL, and it was a pilot. It was a little dab of money, I think $5,000, that we received. That was part of a larger project proposed by somebody in the Department of Public Health or something like that from the Public Health Department at UNMC. Med center. And anyways, yeah, a little dab of money, and we have just enough money to send students out to go collect ticks and pay for the kits. But to do this comprehensively, I think it's woefully underfunded. The active surveillance is something I think is absolutely necessary, and I don't think that you can totally trust the maps that are out there. Because,
right.
I mean, where are those maps coming from? They're coming from those of us who scraped together a few bucks and go out and actively survey for ticks.
So do you
It's not as if you have an army of scientists from CDC sweeping the
right.
country doing surveys. They're, you know, they're not in the rural counties in Nebraska.
So do you accept example. Ticks from the public?
Yeah, so that's so the first year we did that, it was amazing how many people were coming with bags of ticks, including my department chair. He said, I found this on my waist this morning. I'm like, great. Can you tell me what it has? So I will try. It was a little tiny amblyomma nymph. And I don't know if we had it prominently displayed. It was the
right.
department chair's tick. But yeah, we had people coming around. And we've been talking about ways that we can, because like everybody, we have limited funds to do the research. And so we're trying to think of ways that we can allow people to submit as many ticks as they want. But we also have to have some sort of a fee associated with that, or because we can't find grant funding for it. And so the fee is simply to cover costs of kits, and we have the army of students that can do the work. But yeah, it's tough. But yeah, active surveillance. Like I said, with the amblyomma ticks in this state, Kearney wasn't supposed to have them. And now we know that they're moving their way across the state. And so it's actually a really, getting back to your point, it's a unique state to study tick ecology, I guess, and pathogens.
What are the most prominent ticks that we have in Nebraska then?
Yeah, so if you go, and some of it will be regional, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you'll have Dermacentor variabilis, which is common dog tick, and you'll have the amblyomma americanum ticks, so...
With a nice
the
white dot on the
tick.
Lone
yeah.
Star tick.
The one I brought you today.
The extremely aggressive little jerks there.
Yeah?
Yeah, they are. They're much more aggressive than dog ticks. And and Ixoides ticks.
Help me understand what that means then. So, like, they run after you. They got a lasso.
Man,
they're from Texas, it sounds like.
I was told they're more hunters than questers.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, they're much.
So, they're going to come after you instead of wait around for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can pull up. So, we've been wanting to do more dry ice traps. So, we've had students try dry ice traps. And it's the amblyomma that will come crawling. I don't think we've had any Dermacentor ticks come crawling.
Hanging out on the grass.
Yeah, so they're hanging out waiting. Yeah,
punk,
yeah.
And the other amblyoma they chase.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the I mean, and just their movement is so much more aggressive. So, you know, if you have a dog tick versus a amblyoma tick or a Lone Star tick, it just seems like they're motoring. They're really quick.
And both of these are competent vectors for Rocky Mountain spotted fever, or?
Well, there are different bugs that are carried by each. And actually, I should mention that one of the most, one of the least discussed things about ticks is not just the bacterial pathogens they transmit, but they also transmit viral pathogens. And that's really important. They can cause really severe disease. So, amblyoma ticks, for example, just in the last few years, we've discovered a new virus, Heartland virus, that can actually be lethal. But there's also other viruses that can be carried by these ticks. What we found in our ticks that we've collected in Nebraska, though, we haven't been screening for the viruses. Those techniques we just haven't established in our lab. They wouldn't be very hard to do. We just haven't done it. It's a little above a summer undergraduate project right now. But we found different species of Rickettsia that are not typically considered pathogenic, although there are anecdotal cases that they can cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So the ones that we've seen in our state are Rickettsia montanensis and Rickettsia amblyomai. And the montanensis we found in the, I'm trying to remember if we've seen it in both amblyoma and Dermacentor ticks, but definitely in the Dermacentor ticks we've found Rickettsia. And then we found Francisella tularensis, I think I mentioned that before. That's a cause of tularemia, and that also can be fatal.
Right.
And that we have found in our Dermacentor ticks.
Do you want to talk about your favorite tick problem that everybody in Nebraska is concerned about?
Well, they should be concerned about it since we're in the beef state.
Yeah, it is,
right?
A beef state.
Is it the red meat allergy?
Yeah.
Also transmitted, well, in the saliva of the Lone Star tick. And it's, I think we've had discussions on this, that it's not like a time limit. It's saliva. So, I mean, I could have the red meat allergy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so this is actually, I'll piggyback off of that just to talk about these different bacterial species and also the viruses. So the transmission dynamics for viruses and bacteria from ticks is very different. So some of these viruses you can find in the saliva of the tick. And so where we normally say if you pull a tick off within 24 hours, you won't get Lyme. That's not necessarily true for the viruses they carry. Those can be transmitted within seconds. So that's something that's really important for the public to know. Don't, you know, you want to check immediately when you're done out in a tick endemic area. Now, with the saliva, this is a really interesting thing for the red meat allergy. And so, yeah, it scares everybody who likes a good steak or a cheeseburger. But it all, you know, it's not just that. It's any meat that has this particular, that has this particular sugar. Basically, it's a sugar moiety that that is in tick spit, and your body recognizes it and goes kind of haywire and produces a robust inflammatory response. And some people, it really affects them.
Yeah, I was at the National Conference for Urban Entomology, and there were two people that I had talked to that have had that allergy, and one of them has, I guess, it's. I don't know, it's grown out of it. It
sort of waned after a while.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to ask was, when you do survey for ticks, mm-hmm. how do you do that?
Yeah, clumsily. So we do a technique called dragging and flagging. And so basically you just take some sort of a rough fabric. And so we have kind of a white felt sort of a fabric, and we put a couple of wooden rods on each end, and then we can either just drag it across the ground where we think there might be ticks, or with the case of amblyoma ticks, they like to hang out in low-hanging shrubs. And so that's where the flagging sort of occurs, where you just kind of drape that over the vegetation and then have a look.
And pick them off.
And pick them off. And if anybody wants to go out and do that, I highly recommend one tool that you take with you, and that is a lint roller.
It is. We both have one of those on our desk.
It is such a magic tool. And,
duct tape.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on Facebook.
And bags. Yeah. I have like Ziploc bags.
Oh, yeah. You always got to have Ziploc bags.
Ziploc bags, duct tape, lint roller.
The first summer we went out doing tick surveys, one of my undergrads wore a white coveralls.
Yeah.
Head to toe. And he got into a hatch of larvae. And we didn't realize it until after we were all done. And we looked down, and his leg is covered with thousands of amblyomma larvae.
Which probably look like poppy seeds or like...
Well, smaller. Like, yeah, like I mean, they're so tiny. And, boy, we had a hard time getting all of those off. And that's another thing that we should mention, because I know that you guys probably get contacted. People say, we have deer ticks here. I've seen them. Mm-hmm. We call them seed ticks or something like that. But we have deer ticks, and it's just they don't understand there are different life stages of the ticks, and a lot of times what they're seeing are nymphs of either Dermacentor or amblyomma, and confusing those with a deer tick. Easy to do for the layperson.
Well, I mean, yeah, a tick's a tick is a tick. Yeah, right, to some folks. I think as a conclusion kind of thing for this episode. We've been talking about some arachnid parasites that suck our blood.
Mm.
They feed on other things as well, including livestock and deer, as well as mice and our pets.
And our kids.
And they do transmit a lot of different kinds of diseases. Some of those diseases take a while to get into our body, like Lyme disease or tularemia or Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Mm-hmm. If somebody were to get a tick off within the hour that they received the tick onto their body, they're doing okay in terms of avoiding those kinds of diseases.
Of the bacterial pathogens.
Of the bacterial,
primarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
But viral pathogens as well as allergies that are transmitted by ticks, those can be nearly instantaneous is what we're
really
doing.
Really quick.
So repellents.
Repellents.
Repellents, DEET, Picaridin, IR3535, oil of lemon eucalyptus, but you can also treat clothing with permethrin. That's not to be put on your skin, but you can treat the clothes that you're going to do your field work or surveying or put your kids outside in, and that should also protect them. So, but tick checks like constantly. I mean, we're both runners. You stop and you check your friend.
Yeah.
And we say we're lighter colors so you can find the ticks faster, and you'll always know that someone's looking for ticks if they've got their pants tucked into their sock.
Yeah, that's for sure.
As two experts on tick checks, where and how thoroughly should people check? Because I hear people say tick checks, and I know that some people that means you look at your shirt and you make sure there's not a tick on it. But what should they do?
Yeah, any crack and crevice.
All the places you don't want to look.
Yeah.
And so can you do it in public?
No.
And I check all my freckles. Like, like, was that okay?
Yeah, check your freckles. Mm-hmm. My daughter has glorious, long, thick hair, and we found so many ticks just from hiking in the woods. It's amazing.
And they tend to get on you and move upward.
Yep,
so
that's
don't
right.
Don't just check below the knee. You need to check. Yeah.
And is this is a tick check just for somebody that's been deep woods hiking, or is it if you go out and do gardening?
I think you should do tick check every time.
Anytime you're outdoors,
Even inside, if people sleep with their pets and their pets aren't treated.
Absolutely, or canine sentinels is what we call them. They go out.
And even if we do treat our pets, they can fall off the pet
So we just recently treated our lovely Basset, and he still gets lots of ticks on him. And fortunately, my kids like to groom him for ticks and put him in a baggie for me.
That's awesome. I have to train my daughter for that in the future. So it is scary. I think we can all agree ticks pose a health hazard to some folks.
Yeah, so to kind of put that in perspective, just real quick. Lyme disease is the most commonly acquired arthropod-borne infection in the United States. So more than what mosquitoes transmit in the United States, tick-borne infections are higher.
Wow.
So
they are medically important, and you need to be aware of that. And there are steps you can take to prevent them from getting on you and things you can do after you come inside to protect yourself and your pets. I think that's a hopeful note for us to end on today, because this is kind of a downer of a topic.
They are super cool, though. Really fun to study.
It is, yeah. I like the idea of them just waiting to hug you.
I think it's always time for ticks. People think that they do not have to treat their pet until after Memorial Day. Like, I've been getting tick calls since February.
Yeah. They got to keep in mind the ticks hide in the leaf litter Yeah, that's where they overwinter and stay toasty. So.
And each stage of a tick's life can last a year or 2 years, too, right?
They can last a long time.
A long time.
Yeah, so like the full life cycle, if everything sort of goes ideally in the wild, is almost 2 years.
Yeah. So definitely do some tick prevention and do some tick checks when you get done outside. We wanted to thank Travis for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
We appreciate it. Yeah, this is awesome. I think that we'll have some tick talks in the future with you.
Fantastic.
We get lots of ticks submitted to us. But until the next time, I'm Jonathan Larson. You can find me at jlarson_UNL.
You can find me at JodyBugsMeUNL.
And you can find the show at arthro_podshow. And you can find, is Travis on the internet? Or
I am. I have a social media presence. Okay. So I believe that I'm on Instagram as Tick Doctor.
Tickstagram.
Tick DR. our message is show us your tick pics.
Yeah. That's awesome.
A little catchy and edgy. But then I'm also on Twitter, and that is at Dr. Beret. I think is my handle is Dr. Beret.
And we will keep all that in the show notes, and we'll look for some pictures of ticks and things to feature as well.
Excellent.
And we hope you've all enjoyed learning a little bit about ticks with us today, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Arthropod.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.